Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, The History of the Life of Ajamiyo, Text Number 1. Sri Parikshit Uvacha, Nivriti Marga Katita, Ado Bhagavata Yata, Krama Yoga Palabdena, Brahmana Yad Asamshiti. Sri Parikshit Uvacha. Maharaj Parikshit said, Nivriti Marga, the path of liberation, Katita, described, Adao, in the beginning, Bhagavata, by your holiness, Yata, duly, Krama, gradually, Yoga Upalabdena, obtained by the yoga process, Brahmana, along with Lord Brahma, after reaching Brahmaloka, yet, by which way, Asamsriti, cessation of the repetition of birth and death. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Parikshit said, O my Lord, O Shukadeva Goswami, you have already described in the second canto the path of liberation, Nivritti Marg. By following that path, one is certainly elevated gradually to the highest planetary system, Brahmaloka, from which one is promoted to the spiritual world along with Lord Brahma. Thus, one's reputation of birth and death in the material world ceases. Purport. Since Maharaj Parikshit was a Vaishnava, when he heard the description at the end of the fifth canto of the different hellish conditions of life, he was very much concerned with how to liberate the conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya and take them back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, he reminded his spiritual master, Shukadeva Goswami, about the Nivritti Marga, or path of liberation, which he had described in the second canto. Maharaj Parikshit, or the time of death, was fortunate to have met Shukadeva Goswami, inquired from Shukadeva Goswami about the path of liberation at that crucial time. Shukadeva Goswami very much appreciated his question and congratulated him by saying, Varyan esha te prashna krito loka hitam ripa atmavit samata pumsam shrotavyadishu yak paraha. My dear king, your question is glorious because it is very beneficial for all kinds of people. The answer to this question is the prime subject matter for hearing and is approved by all transcendentalists. Bhagavatam 2.1.1. Parikshit Maharaj was astonished that the living entities in the conditional stage do not accept the path of liberation, devotional service, instead of suffering in so many hellish conditions. This is a symptom of a Vaishnava. Vancha kalpa trubhyascha kripa sindhu vyevacha. A Vaishnava is an ocean of mercy. Para dukkha dukhi. He is unhappy because of the unhappiness of others. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj, being compassionate toward the conditioned souls suffering in hellish life, suggested that Shukadeva Goswami continue describing the path of liberation, which he had explained in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. The word Asamsriti is very important in this connection. Some Smriti refers to continuing on the path of birth and death. Asam Smriti, on the contrary, refers to Nivritti Marg, or the path of liberation, by which one's birth and death cease and one gradually progresses to Brahmaloka, unless one is a pure devotee who does not care about going to the higher planetary systems, in which case one immediately returns home back to Godhead by executing devotional service. Tyaktva Deham Punarjanma Naiti. Pariksit Maharaj therefore was very eager to hear from Shukadeva Goswami about the path of liberation for the conditioned soul. According to the opinion of the Acharyas, the word Krama Yogopalabdhena indicates that by first performing Karma Yoga and then Jnana Yoga and finally coming to the platform of Bhakti Yoga, one can be liberated. Bhakti Yoga, however, is so powerful that it does not depend on Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga. Bhakti Yoga itself is so powerful that even an impious man with no assets in Karma Yoga or an illiterate man with no assets in Jnana Yoga can immediately be elevated to the spiritual world if he simply adheres to Bhakti Yoga. Mamai Vaishasi Asamshaya. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 8:7 that by the process of Bhakti Yoga, one undoubtedly goes back to Godhead, back home to the spiritual world. Yogis, however, instead of going directly to the spiritual world, sometimes want to see other planetary systems, and therefore they ascend to the planetary system where Lord Brahma lives, as indicated here by the word Brahmana. At the time of dissolution, Lord Brahma, along with all the inhabitants of Brahmaloka, goes directly to the spiritual world. This is confirmed in the Vedas as follows. Brahmana sa te sarve samprapte prati sanshare parasyante kritatmana pravishanti parampadam. Because of their exalted position, those who are on Brahmaloka at the time of dissolution go directly back home, back to Godhead, along with Lord Brahma. So the text again. Shri Pariksit Vacha Nivritti Marga Katita Ado Bhagavata Yata Krama Yoga Palabdena Brahmana Yada Samshite. Maharaj Pariksit said, O my Lord, O Shukadeva Goswami, you have already described in the second canto the path of liberation, Nivritti Marg. By following that path, one is certainly elevated gradually to the highest planetary system, Brahmaloka, for which one is promoted to the spiritual world along with Lord Brahma. Thus one's repetition of birth and death in the material world ceases. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskadhyade Siddharane. After finishing the description of 28 different hells, Maharovana, Kumbhipaka, etc., then Pariksit Maharaj was concerned that people have some alternative, that there is a path of Nivritti Marg, and that is the path by which one can gradually become liberated from the material existence. The lowest part of material existence is to go to the hellish planets and specifically be tortured by the Yamadutas. Of course, here on this planet, you can also get tortured by different governmental agencies, or even your best friend may torture you sometimes. But the Yamadutas are especially expert at torturing. I don't think even on this planet yet they have places of torture where they have trees made out of iron and they drag the victim across the iron leaves and your skin gets torn off. They haven't perfected the torture in the same degree that the Yamadutas have. Because the Yamadutas have been torturing people since time immemorial, so they know a few tricks here and there. But Pariksit Maharaj was not happy to hear that people are being tortured in the material world. Of course, in the material world, Abhadra says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we only imagine there's something called happiness in the material world, which is happiness in the material world means the absence of misery. It's not the actual happiness in the spiritual world. In any case, less miserable we are, then the better we feel. And the process of Nivritti Marg encourages one by gradually taking away one's material miseries. And the path of karma yoga, dutiful activity, ultimately means less sinful activity. The Vedas do not prescribe any sinful activity, or as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, yesham antakatam papam janam kunya karmanam tedvanva moha nirmuktva bhajante mam dridavrataha. That those who have practiced pious activities and have given up sinful activities. So generally people are engaged in sinful activity. Eating meat in current Kali Yuga is not uncommon. When the sages heard that a cow was being and a bull was being beaten by Vishudra, they couldn't believe it. They thought it was fake news. Because it was unheard of that anyone would have the nerve to even hit a cow or a bull. Nowadays, if you hit a dog, people can't... They hit a dog, I can't believe it. Of course, now they also police, often in America, they kill dogs. But generally speaking, there's a lot of people who will be offended if you hit their dog, what to speak of, kick their dog. Because if you kick the dog, he'll probably bite your foot. In any case, the sages couldn't believe that anyone would have the nerve to even beat a cow or a bull, what to speak of, try to kill them. But in this age, it's quite common. Previously, if one was intoxicated or eating meat or intoxication or even illicit sex was quite uncommon. There were strict rules and regulations, even how women would associate with men. If a woman would go out of their, if a girl would go out of her house, even one night, then no one would marry her. So this would be unheard of nowadays. They think, oh, this is too restrictive. Women should just go out and they should just choose, you know, experiment. And after some time of experimenting, then you find who your mate is. As I mentioned before, one devotee, she was living with one other devotee man for 20 years and they had 3 children. And one day they decided to get married. So she went to her mother and said, I decided to get married to this man. So her mother's reply was, are you sure he's the right man? So this is Kali Yuga. And what is the problem? What is the misery, the main misery in material existence in Kali Yuga? It's sinful activity. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't mention if you don't win the lottery, then you'll be unhappy. That's the cause of unhappiness. If you don't get a good job, you'll be unhappy. When Arjuna said, Ata keno priyuktoyam papam charati purusha anicham napi varshneya paladiva niyojita. What is the force that makes people unhappy, that causes them to do things that they don't want to do? And Krishna said, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna, Samudbhavaha, Mahashino, Mahapatma, vidinam ihavarinam. It is lust only, Arjuna, born of the mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. Dimena vriyate vanira yataradara shomalena cha yatobena avrita garvas tatatenetam avritam. Just like the fire is covered by smoke, or the mirror is covered by dust, or the embryo is covered by the womb, so the living entity is covered by different degrees of lust. Our conception of existence depends upon how much lust we're covered by. Even a little lust will put one into the bodily concept of life. It doesn't take a whole lot. Even on Brahmaloka, as described here, people still think we're from Brahmaloka. There is some still false ego there, even on Brahmaloka, because of the covering of illusory energy. But the more one is covered, then the more one is unaware of one's actual identity as a spiritual being, and therefore there must be some anxiety. Because after all, this body is very fragile, it keeps on growing older, it's going to become more diseased, ultimately it fails and we have to leave it, and we don't know where we're going, so there must be some anxiety. On the other hand, Krishna says, Avritam gena etena gyanino nityavarina kama rupena kuntiya dusprena analena cha. Thus the man's pure consciousness is covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. So, in other words, lust, we can't satisfy it, we can't eliminate it. As long as we're serving it, it's simply going to impel us more and more. And it burns us. It puts us in anxiety, illusion, pain, suffering, called dukkha. Ultimately, it blocks the channels of the body, and when the airs of life don't follow or flow properly, then that's called dukkha. Du means bad and ka means space. So when the body's not full of space and the airs of life flow nicely, then we experience misery. And that's usually due to lust, psychological pressure, which influences the mind and the senses for activities which actually block the channels, subtle and gross channels in the body, and cause misery. So illicit sex, meat-eating, gambling, intoxication, they're all going to block the channels of the body and cause all kinds of psychological pain and suffering and illusion, as well as gross physical misery. To regulate those activities, to regulate sense gratification, that's the beginning of varna and ashram. Not that I'm a shudra, I can do whatever I want. No, I'm a shudra, I'm in the Bali concept of life, I'm always in a state of lamentation, but I'm obliged to serve the higher orders, the higher castes. Not that I can eat anything, go to McDonald's because I'm a shudra. No, there was no McDonald's. If you wanted to eat a goat, then you had to, if you wanted to eat meat, then you had to eat a goat, and there was a procedure you had to follow. And if you didn't follow it, you were in trouble. There were no slaughterhouses. There were no places where they raised unlimited chickens in a chicken factory. You couldn't go to McDonald's or Kentucky Fried Chicken. These things didn't exist. If you wanted to eat meat, one had to go through a lot of endeavor, and it was quite restricted. And at the same time, there was some hint that you were going to get into difficulty by such sinful activities. Similarly, social structure was such that illicit sex was practically non-existent. There was no varna, there were no people intoxicated very rarely, especially in public. Ajamil saw two shudras who were intoxicated, but that was quite uncommon. And therefore it was written about some many millions of probably Brahmins ago. the life of Ajamil, which will be described here, it was quite uncommon that such people, such Shudras, would openly display intoxication. So in this way, the Vedic culture minimized sinful activity, and therefore there was culture. To think that one can engage in sinful activity and have a culture, it's not possible. Even the animals, their lives are regulated by the material nature. And when human beings, their lives become unregulated, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, then they become less than animals. As they had one exhibit at one world's fair of all the dangerous animals in the world. And people would walk through and see the showcases of the dangerous animals. And finally they came to the last exhibit, the most dangerous animal on the planet. And you looked into the mirror and you saw it. In other words, the most dangerous animal on this earth is the human beings, so-called human beings. But by such regulation, then there is some opportunity to understand what happiness in the material world at least would be. People are mistaken thinking that to gratify their senses they're going to become happy. This is all false propaganda. That the more illicit sex you have especially is advertised. Pornography on the internet takes in more money than the total amount of money people spend on sports, on magazines, on movies, etc., etc. Because people are actually believing that if they have more illicit sex of all different varieties, unlimited opportunities, then they'll actually become happy. But it's found that people actually become depressed. They even lose interest in real sex life. They simply become absorbed in unlimited amounts of lust, and therefore people become more and more degraded. They're not attracted to the opposite sex anymore, so then they try the same sex, or children, or animals, or dead bodies, and as the material nature puts one deeper and deeper into the mode of ignorance, one will try anything. So, those who have following the regular principles of freedom, who restrict lust, who regulate their activities, gradually they start inquiring about, is there a better happiness in life? Is there something positive? And their examples in society are someone like the Vaishyas. They have nice food, they grow it themselves, they get organic milk from grass-fed cows. The atmosphere they live in is clean, their relationships are considerate, they're governed by the spiritual etiquette, Vedic etiquette. They live a civilized life free from fear, with proper eating and sleeping. There's hardly any anxiety, so they sleep peacefully. There's not so much agitation. They have nice relationships with others. They don't try to exploit them. Their family life is stable, and people care for each other. So they see a higher example, and one will follow that. Although it's material, but it's more towards some happy material existence. Less fear, less anxiety, more satisfaction. Then, after being satisfied, the higher example of the Kshatriyas, who are inquisitive from the Brahmins and serve the Brahmins and therefore know about the higher planetary systems and offer sacrifices to go there, know about, at least in theory, about reincarnation, because trying to perform sacrifices to go to the higher planetary systems imply that you're going to reincarnate. And therefore there is knowledge even by the Kshatriyas in the Vedic culture. They're Jignasu, they're inquisitive, and therefore they inquire from the learned persons, the Brahmins, and gradually they execute Jnana Yoga. We find the Kshatriya kings, They were surrounded by Brahminical ministers, and often they'd hear about the glories of Krishna, the glories of the previous kings and their heroic activities. And that way they were inquisitive how to live life in a more noble, expansive, and progressive way. Ultimately, their aim, of course, is to reach the higher planetary systems. And those who understand the purpose of life is to get liberation, then even the Kshatriya kings would often go into the forest, and they live a Brahminical life of austerity and cultivation of meditation, ultimately even to go beyond the heavenly planets, sometimes even to go back to the spiritual world, or to obtain liberation. So by following the progressive path of Varna and Ashram, one will gradually get to the platform of liberation. But that's not possible in Kali Yuga. The influence of sinful activity, the propaganda to perform sinful activity, the lack of spiritual education from the beginning of life is such that it's not possible for people to follow the Varna and Ashram system in this age. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has introduced a method of bhakti yoga which is accessible to everyone. Especially the chanting of Hare Krishna, and then by chanting Hare Krishna, one may obtain some inclination to hear the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And then by hearing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, practically apply it in deity worship, either in the temple or at home, and learn how to cooperate with the devotees to ultimately worship the yoga deity, who's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by spreading the Sankirtan movement. And that way, create holy places, not only in the temples, but even wherever the Sankirtan movement goes, chants Hare Krishna and distributes transcendental literature, as well as transcendental food offered to Krishna, creating a spiritual atmosphere. So the Hare Krishna mantra will give people the intelligence how to perform and why to perform devotional service and get the opportunity even to become liberated even in one lifetime. And if not in one lifetime, at least be protected from the onslaught of Kali Yuga, which seems to be rapidly descending upon this planet. What was forbidden or considered abominable even 50 years ago is considered completely normal nowadays. Not only normal, but it's considered to be desirable. And anyone who's so-called not following this so-called normal behavior is considered to be abnormal. And people are wondering when you're actually going to become normal, like we are. And it's only beginning. Kali Yuga, we're only in the junction between Kali Yuga and Dwarpa Yuga. And it's not that the Hare Krishna movement, although it may will become prominent in the next 10,000 years, it's not that everyone is going to take part in it. Just like in a rainstorm, then some people have the good fortune of having umbrellas and being protected from the rain. But those who have no umbrella, they get drenched. So those who are not don't have the protection of the holy name in Kali Yuga, they'll become drenched by the onslaught of Kali Yuga. And therefore we can't even imagine, well, we hear in the Bhagavatam how people will be eating their own children at the end of Kali Yuga, but it appears that we don't have to wait so long. Even when Prabhupada was here, the devotees were mentioning some so-called avant-garde people, artists, they were having parties where they're eating aborted feces. And even in the reports in America, sometimes there are people who are like zombies. Even in public, they jump on other people and start eating them publicly. So although it's not common, especially hope here in Ljubljana, it sounds rather odd, but those times are coming. People who become so hungry, they'll become so bewildered, so contaminated by Kali Yuga, that we can't even imagine the horrors that will take place. So hell will seem like a relief. If you go to hell, at least there's some regulation there. At least it's in some people are in charge there. But we should take shelter of the holy names and offer that shelter to others. If people are drowning in rain, then if we were the umbrella salesman, we should go out and try and deliver people umbrellas so they can be protected from the onslaught of the rain. So similarly, we have the method of being protected from Kali Yuga. It's not what people think. The holy name doesn't bestow necessarily great material opulence or even material learning or health or wealth or anything. It does provide protection from lust, from anger, from greed, which alone will protect one from the miseries of Kali Yuga, and offers one who goes beyond simply looking for protection from lust, anger, and greed, from the miseries of material life. It offers an opportunity to enter into the spiritual realm of consciousness, where one is always joyful. By taking away our ignorance, due to ignorance, we think we're supposed to be miserable, and therefore our general consciousness, when we're miserable, we think we're justified to be depressed and miserable. But that's also an aspect of illusion. The reality is they'll be always joyful, that there's nothing to be miserable about because we're eternal. Only due to our identification with this gross and subtle body have we become miserable. But one who actually is out of this gross and subtle conceptions of a material existence, then they're joyful all the time. Because there's no reason to be miserable. There's nothing going to happen to us that's going to be a cause of misery. For the body, if the body's suffering, well, that's very good for the conditioned soul, because that helps us become detached from material activities. And when we become detached from material activities, then we have the opportunity in this age to take up positive spiritual activities just by chanting Hare Krishna, that Srimati Radharani and Krishna and their associates will come, and we have the opportunity to serve them just by chanting their name in this age. We don't have to prepare elaborate clothes for them or elaborate prasadam. If we just chant Hare Krishna happily, lovingly, and with proper understanding, if we live life in a Krishna conscious way so that we come to the mode of goodness, and we understand why we should be joyful, and we become receptive to the holy name, then we'll, even in this lifetime, we can live a constantly joyful existence, unaffected by the problems that's being created unnecessarily in Kali Yuga. People don't have to be forced to perform sinful activities and go to hell. The holy name can protect one from that, if it's understood properly. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
I was trying to find the verse of 7th canto, but I can't find it on the verse. I remember in 7th canto, when the Vikasta of life is mentioned, there is someone in the purport that Grihastha can also achieve perfection even without Nivritti mark. Is that considered then they're taking the Nivritti mark then, or how is...
I don't know. You'd have to show me what you were referring to.
Yes, I'm trying to...
Yeah. In any case, Nivritti mark is supposed to lead to Nivritti mark. There's no question of liberation without Nivritti mark. Pravritti Marg is the path of enjoyment, but that path of enjoyment ultimately is supposed to lead to the path of detachment. So Pravritti Marg may be considered here it says Nivritti Marg is Karma Yoga, Karma, Jnana, and then ultimately Bhakti. Pravritti Marg is regulating material enjoyment, so that gradually one comes, that's...
Should it be like gradually, first karma, then jnana, then bhakti, or can it be immediately bhakti?
No, we're saying immediately bhakti. We're trying to. But generally, even when we were trying to take the bhakti yoga, a lot of time, because we don't have a sufficient understanding, we mix it with karma and with gyan.
That's why it's mentioned gradually.
Yeah, because that's why it's gradual. Because we have to gradually get information of why we should perform. For instance, Prabhupada defines karma yoga when one knows that the goal is Krishna, but one is addicted to the fruits of one's activities, then one is said to be acting in karma yoga. When one knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculation to understand Krishna, then he's said to be acting in jnana yoga. One knows that the goal is Krishna and seeks Krishna completely in pure bhakti yoga, then one is said to be acting in buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga. So it takes some time to understand the uselessness of trying to enjoy the material energy, or even try to figure out everything about Krishna rather than serving him. So that will take some time. But then Krishna says if we invest our time in bhakti yoga, specifically serving the Sankirtan movement and executing the sadhana prescribed by our acharyas, then the result is that Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, then Krishna gradually gives us the understanding so that when we see things properly, then the influence of the modes of material nature will gradually cease. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.